A book and a bear.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. We've come to die with you again. Okay. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the A Book and a Burp podcast. We are your co-hosts, Bryony, Georgia, and Ellie. And this week, we are on to our final four episodes of the year, and we are starting Kingdom of Ash by Sarah J. Maas.
I don't know why I should be doing ghosts.
I like it when it wobbles. It's floppy.
You know it's a decent size book noise. If the thickness makes a noise when you wobble it.
There we go. It's ASMR. Oh. Anyways, Sarah J. fucking Maas, what do you think this is? What kind of life do you want us to be living? An empty one? A hollow one? Because that is what's going to happen as we now go into the deepest of book hangovers after finishing this series. And yes, this is also part one of many parts of Kingdom of Ash.
One of many.
Look at this chonky boy. We can't even do that in two. Probably not three. So we're doing four at this stage.
That's the rough idea, yeah.
What are we drinking, ladies?
Well, I am suffering with extreme hay fever today. So I've had a coffee, literally just finished a coffee, and now I'm drinking Fireball and Red Bull.
Jesus. There's so many balls in that. So
yeah, there's a lot of balls.
You know how I feel about balls. It's for Aelin's
They're in
lost...
your mouth now.
Yeah, true. Yeah. It represents Aelin's lost power. May it rest in pieces.
Oh, yeah. That's a sticking point, isn't it? Shit.
It is, isn't it? Oh, fuck, that hurts.
Well, I'm back to drinking for this book because it's what it bloody deserves. So thanks for that, Sarah. I'm drinking my favourite sparkling wine in honour of the twinkle in Rowan's eyes.
Oh, that's a lot nicer than what mine is.
Who is she? We don't know.
Look, I'm following George's lead with Fireball and apple juice, but I also plan on possibly taking a shot every time a big character dies. And yes, that means that when the 13 die, that is 13 shots in one chapter.
That's a lot.
I'm already regretting my commitments, but I'm going to try.
You put in the word possibly, which was not consulted with us prior to this.
It was
when
not.
When I confronted you about this today, you said, I probably won't, because I said, what about the Wyverns?
Exactly right.
13 writers and then 13 Wyverns. People I cry over. So Gabrielle is obviously getting a big swig there.
Connell? Will we drink for Connell?
Nah, I'm not sad about him dying. It probably wasn't his fault, but he's also a cunt.
Okay, sure.
It's tragic when it happens for Fenris, but we don't have the emotional attachment.
We only cry for Fenris, not for Connell.
We cry for Argentina.
Well,
cry for me, Argentina.
The truth is, I've never left you.
I think that she should at least take a shot for Astrid's women because it was a Braxos' mate.
Yeah.
And he would
give
you
a mate just to take
and
it away.
And then just take it away.
So cruel. Oh,
fucking hell.
Can you take an extra shot for Gabrielle for the ruin? Well, for the existing now daddy issues.
They were already there, if we're honest.
Yeah.
We can renegotiate the terms of my shot taking when we get there.
We'll revisit.
General vibes for the book, guys. Who wants to kick us off?
Well.
Oh, the dramatic pause. Wow. Oh, it's still going.
I don't actually think that I've sobbed so much in my entire life this reread through. Like, it was absolutely destructive for my mental health. Like, Aelin, Fenris, sob some more.
Oh.
Aelin, Rowan, sobs even harder. And then the 13 dies. I can't really say much more, honestly. I just want to curl up into a ball and not ever see the light of day again. So that's it.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's what you
fair
get.
Enough. Well, for me, this book was simply filled with ghost leopard moments, which, for context, you will all remember fondly the moment that Lysandra appeared in ghost leopard form for the first time to fuck up the Valg and save our sweet, sweet, sweet boys. And that moment for me was just epic, to the point that in our group chat with zero context, I just sent ghost leopard in all caps.
All caps.
And everyone knew what I was talking about because it was a moment. And those moments happened repeatedly. repeatedly in this book, like every goddamn chapter. And because of that, I inhaled this book. Look, there were convenient plot points throughout. Things all got nicely tied up in ways like, oh, one of you must die. Psych, Dorian, your daddy's coming back because he's a good guy now. So he'll just take that one for you. Yeah. So there's a few things where I was a bit like, okay, this is convenient. And also like everyone ending happily coupled off in their little heterosexual relationships. Again, not the most dynamic ending ever, but I can overlook that purely because I adored the overall story. This is without a doubt probably my favorite series. And I will never recover from it.
Absolutely not.
Yep. So great. Thanks.
You're like, thanks. Thanks for ruining my fucking life.
Yeah. Well, this book is just like the epic conclusion to a story I adore. It ripped my heart out, stuffed it in an iron coffin, flew it across the ocean, let a horse called Butterfly trample it. And by the end, I turned to ash like old mate Erewhon because this book absolutely killed me.
Wow.
Well, who are you, Georgia? What was that elaborate story?
Did I sob hysterically? Yes. Was our Snapchat group chat just filled with Georgia and I crying back and forth? Also, yes.
Constantly.
But fuck it up, this is the best. And, like, you also all know now why I have been wearing a You Do Not Yield necklace every goddamn day. Yeah, feelings.
Oh, it's a lot.
It's a lot. Okay, we're starting off. Kingdom of Ash. And it's not even part one yet. The book starts with these lovely, horrific chapters called The Prince and the Princess.
Yeah, no one asked for these. Not one single person. Honestly, Sarah, my first word of this chapter was screaming in all capitals and in bold. Screaming.
Yeah, look, it fits.
The first chapter is The Prince, and it's about Rowan searching for Aelin since she has been taken from him. And we get this fuck off quote at the beginning, and it makes me want to actually fucking die. Before he faced the Dark Queen, who had torn into his innermost self, stealing his mate long before she had been locked in an iron coffin, and after he was done with her, after that, then he'd take on the cold-blooded gods themselves, hell-bent on destroying what might remain of his mate. Oh, God, we love a man on a vengeance quest. But he's just been searching for months, and sometimes he spoke on the bond, like the mating bond, and he just keeps saying, I will find you. And I scream again. And then this is where we insert the song Rescue by Lauren, I don't know how to say her last name, Daigle. Daigle. That is where we insert this song right here.
Well, then we leave Rowan in his trauma and we jump on over to Aelin and hers, because why not? Like Rowan, she's also not doing okay mentally and or physically. She's refusing to give them anything. And yeah, they're not taking too kindly to that, but we do have a quote here, which is, she would not tell them what they wished to know. No matter how often her screams drowned out the raging river, no matter how often the snap of her bones cleaved through the bellowing rapids. And I don't know about you guys, but I was like, okay, she's near a body of water. Where do we know a water source?
Exactly.
I was trying to piece it together. So she ends up telling herself a story when shit gets bad, which is, you know, quite frequent in these times. It is the story of the young girl who loved her kingdom.
Oh, which is no.
It's so painful. Oh,
it hurts. It hurts a lot. She says that sometimes when she felt the pain, she would fix her stare on her companion, not the hunter who caused the pain, but the white wolf who was forced to witness it. Oh, poor baby Fenris. So we have another quote. By the way, everyone, this episode, the next four episodes are going to be filled with soul-destroying quotes. A princess who was to live for 1,000 years longer. That had been her gift. It was now her curse. But also, I have a bone to pick, because let's flash forward to the end of the book. We've got an eternity with Rowan, okay? Because we're immortal fae. He's already 500 years older than us. Does this mean that we only get half of our immortal lifespan with him? Because he will eventually fade before us. Why do you mean to tell me that I have 500 years on this planet without Rowan?
Well, like, you've got to think they're going to have years and years and centuries together before that happens.
But then they're going to have centuries where he's dead.
Well, like, how long do immortal lifespans last? Do they just never run out? They just slowly fade over time.
These are the questions I need answered, because now I'm concerned.
You've just rocked my world, because I've just blocked that out.
I'm scared, because I'm happy to accept the fate that They're in Terrison going to live out the rest of their lives together, happily ever after, with 75,000 children. I'm okay with that. I'm not okay with him dying before her.
Yeah.
Because I'm okay with her dying before him. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Because then I can come cheer him up. That's fine.
We don't know how long mortal lifespans are. Therefore, I feel like we can't think about it too much because it could be never ending for all we know.
Mm. So we leave that moment. Aelin is, like we said, she's telling the story to herself, and that's it. One of the only things keeping her sane is that when she's at her lowest, she just remembers that once upon a time in a land long since burned to ash, there was a young princess who loved her kingdom. And she remembers that she'd once spoken those words to a prince, and how she imagines that that task of protecting her kingdom now falls upon him. And every day her magic is like thrashing at the leash, and between the bouts of torture she is experiencing and like the pain of everything she has fucking lost, she is struggling to hold on. That's where we start this book.
Yeah.
This real low point.
I too
point.
Am struggling to hold on.
And then we dive into part one, which is called Armies and Allies. And chapter one starts with Aelin's point of view. Things are frosty, to say the least. Like, the snow in Terrison has come early and there have been no signs of Erewhon's army. Aelin is, like, thinking about how fucked everything is and how they're, like, praying for, you know, salvation, essentially. And we get this quote, which is, "Even if those same gods threatened everything he loved, if beings from another world could be considered gods at all." And I was like, that seems super interesting, Aelin, but okay. Aelin is giving Lysandra the cold shoulder for the whole, we'll pretend to be your cousin and then fuck you so our children can keep up the bloodline ruse.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Which, if the tables were turned, we would be pissed. We have a lot of grief about Aelin in this book, but him being angry is justified. Some shit he does with his anger isn't, but we'll get there. We get this quote, and it's, "Aelin could barely stand to look at her, to talk to her. He only did so because he had to uphold this ruse too, to pretend that he was her faithful cousin, her fearless commander who would lead her and aid Terrison to victory, however unlikely. So he played the part, one of many he'd donned in his life. Yet the moment Lysandra changed her golden hair for dark tresses, ash river eyes for emerald, he stopped acknowledging her existence." Like, it's brutal. It's fucked. The whole donning a mask thing for me is particularly heartbreaking because he hasn't had to have that type of internal dialogue since, like, Era of Fire when we first met him. And I'm like, oh, he's back in that bad place.
It's gone to the bad place. But also, poor Lysandra, I don't do well with the silent treatment, as you could imagine. I'm just like, no, you will talk to me. We will have this fight. If not, I will provoke you enough right now to make the fight even worse than it could have been.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's so funny.
Like, throughout this book, I really understand why Aelin is hurt by everything that's happened, but Lysandra is not to blame for that.
No, it is Aelin. It is.
Anyway. Be mad at her because she's locked up in an iron coffin and is being brutally tortured. So, yeah.
They kill some Valg who stumble in their territory, and then they go to the Owlsbrook estate. He thinks about what could have happened to Manon and to Dorian because they haven't heard from them at all. They say that Aelin has gone to Eldris.
There's a plural.
It's Eldry. An elder man.
An elder man. An elderly man who was dry.
He's got dry skin.
He's got psoriasis. He needs some
psoriasis. Yes, they go to the elder man who has dry skin so Lysandra can hang around in her normal form. No, sorry. They say that Aelin has gone to the elder man. Aelin and the elder man have gotten married and now they both have dry skin.
Beautiful. Imagine the dandruff.
They've done that so that Lysandra can hang around in her normal form and it won't be, you know, super weird. She's been trying to speak with Aelin, but he's not having it. He ain't having it. Not at all. Evangeline ends up running out because, again, she's staying with Murtagh, who is obviously at the Owlsbrook State. She runs out and jumps on Aelin and gives him a big hug. And then Lysandra appears and Evangeline is so excited. She tells her how she went to visit the land that Aelin had promised to Lysandra. Oh, it's just really sweet.
It is.
Anyway, so they're preparing troops for Erewhon's attack, and they are trying to figure out why the Valg were wandering around. And they're believing that they're trying to find ways to enter Terrasen, which isn't just like outright walking straight through the front gates. So that's good. They're eating breakfast the next day when they get a message stating that Erewhon and his troops sat the elder man with dry skin, Eldris. They make up a lie that Aelin got out and is on her way back. And Adian must think, like, with his soldier brain, he switches it out. He unlocks his head. He takes out his current brain, puts it to the side, and then he puts his other brain in and he goes, okay, this is my soldier mind. So, no. And he has to think about how to stop Erewhon's fleet from continuing up the coast of Orin.
So, we're now with our dear sweet Elide, and she's travelling with the three Fey warriors, Lorcan, Rowan, and Gavriel. What a lucky, lucky gal. I mean, dire circumstances, but I'd like to be in that meat sandwich any day.
I would like to be in that sandwich.
So, Gavriel, of course, is just... He's just such a little sweetheart. He's looking after her. He's like, look, I know you hate Lorcan right now because he was just a pussy-ass bitch who crawled after Maeve on his knees. I'll take you under my metaphorical wing because remember, I am a lion. Scooch on in. Lorcan and her are ignoring each other, believe it or not. He was Maeve's bitch, really, and she's just like, I can't look at you. You disgust me. We've also got Rowan here, and he's not really looking after himself. He's having a bit of a time. He's in a bit of a state.
He's not showering. He's not wiping his bum after pooing.
Oh. No, he's... He's being like all those white people on TikTok. Who
I feel
just
like there's a bare minimum. Wait, who outed themselves on TikTok for not wiping their bum?
There was a whole thing that happened where people were like, hold on, do you actually wash your asshole? Like, do you pull your cheeks apart and get in there? And literally it was like all these white guys being like, what do you mean do I wash my ass? Well, I'm not gay. Like, it was like you just confidently outing yourself for not washing your ass.
Jesus Christ.
So long as they're wiping it, though, as a bare minimum.
They need to be wiping.
No matter what level you reach, just wipe your ass.
Just wipe your ass.
Rowan's past that. He can't.
If you take nothing else from this episode, wipe your ass.
Lorcan has ripped off pieces of his shirt for her period, but she's actually using it to wipe Rowan's ass every time he does a shit. Yeah, we got a little bit of sidetrack there. Okay. So throughout this chapter, we are following them, chasing down. So we're not just here for the love triangle that now is the four of them. No, we are actually here to find Aelin. And phase one of that plan is to chase down Maeve's commanders in Dorinel, because they have basically a slim to none chance of actually chasing down Maeve herself because she's, you know, all powerful.
We have this whole moment where Elide watches them break a commander's legs, like Rowan throws him out a window, they fall to the ground and then like break his spine. In the hopes of getting further information. Rowan is ruthless and it's just super fucking hot. I'm back to where I started with Rowan. Is they breaking?
I love it. We then jump to the next chapter, and Aelin is not all gravy, baby. These chapters are extremely hard to read. She's basically lying on an altar, dreaming of burning stags. She's staring at Fenris, who's watching her, and usually she's put back in her iron coffin, but this time Cairn left her on an altar where he had finished like breaking her feet apart, bone by bone, basically. And he just left her there. Big yikes. Her and Fenris have come up with a code to communicate. This is extremely traumatic, so just bear with me here. Okay. One blink for yes, two for no, three for are you all right, four for I am here, I am with you, five for this is real, you are awake. Fenris again blinked three times. Are you all right? Aelin swallowed against the thickness in her throat, her tongue peeling off the roof of her mouth. She blinked once. Yes. She counted his blinks. Six. He'd made that one up. Liar. Or something like it. She refused to acknowledge that particular code. She blinked once again. Yes.
Oh my God.
Oh. So she doesn't know how long it's been. She's covered in more iron now. It's now the mask, chains, and like these little, what are they called? Little
gauntlets.
Little mittens.
Yeah. Gauntlets. Danger mittens. I was quite proud of that one. Thank you.
So fucking good. And she's got the mask on. She's got the chain. She's got the danger mittens. She hears Can coming again and she starts shaking. Fenris blinks 4 times. He is here and he is with her.
Oh.
Can is gross. He's turned on by the torture, but Maeve put a gag order on him so he can't touch her like that. Thank God.
But it's still
extremely fucking terrifying.
I was not going to be okay if that was a development. No. But moral of the story is they want Aelin to swear the blood oath to Maeve and she's not breaking. You get this quote, which is, "A few little words and you and I will part ways forever. She'd never say them. Never swear the blood oath to Maeve. Swear it and hand over everything she knew, everything she was, become slave eternal and usher in the doom of the world. She keeps thinking that she will endure this and she will go through all of this for Terrison." Oh. Fucking hell.
Wow. All for a fucking place that does it, like that Darrow's just fucking been like, "We don't even like you anymore, Soz."
Yeah, Soz bros. I'd actually like rather face a demon army alone.
Yeah. We don't like women. Demons over women.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we're with Manon. And she and the 13, along with Dorian, are travelling in the mountains to locate the Crokken witches. Manon is thinking about what she will say and do if they find the little Crokken witches. She's thinking about Aelin's sacrifice and how she will not break her word that she will bring those Krokkens to come fight in this war. Because she's like, "Hi, Krokkens, you don't know me." Or actually you do, because I have single-handedly been trying to erase your existence from the face of this earth.
Yes.
But I am technically your queen and I'd like you to come fight and die for me.
Correct, cool. Yes.
Aside from that, her and Dorian, they don't want to put a label on it, on whatever they are. They're just, you know, they're in the unknown. They're in the spooky, the hot, the sexy kind of vibe, which I'm here for. Yeah, so they've been sneaking off having a little bit of hanky-panky in the snow, which, you know, each to their own. In earlier books, Dorian was very much sexy playboy, right? I'm now getting a little bit more of a nympho vibe. And I mean, that might happen to you once your girlfriend's head gets lopped off.
Nympho vibe.
Dorian the Nympho. Because now he's got daddy phantom hands and he's like, "I will take you here and now." And I'm like, he's always given me that vibe, but I've never seen it. Because he didn't try that shit with Selena or with Saoirse. But with Manon, he's just like, "I will fuck you in every which way. Take my dick." And I'm like, okay, you've been through some trauma. I get that. But you are now a sex fiend and we're in the middle of a war. Time and place.
No, I support his choices.
I also don't think that Manon is as into him as he is into her.
Stuck thinking about this particular woman's baps, but anyway.
That's it. She actually is in love with Elaine's tits.
She is.
And that little ankle.
it's mainly the tits, but then she thinks about that ankle and she's like, oh.
Full body chills.
I actually have a kink for munted ankles.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm just sensing he has some undealt with issues.
Well, yeah, he does.
As an empath, I think that watching his girlfriend have his head chopped off has led to some further trauma.
Yeah, oh you'd God. Be right. You're not wrong. Empathic skills, they're on.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. Switched onto it.
Dorian is saying that he basically feels very little except for when he is with Manon. And we get this quote, "But it made no difference if he cared about them, about himself, he supposed. Caring hadn't done him any favours, hadn't done Saoirse any favours, and it wouldn't matter once he gave up everything to seal the word gate."
He's not wrong.
Dorian begins to summon someone and we get this sad moment where we have another quote. Again, so many quotes. Not even sorry. "She had been willing to yield everything to save Terrison, to save all of them. He could do nothing less. Aelin certainly had more to lose. A mate and husband who loved her. A court who'd follow her into hell. A kingdom long awaiting her return. All he had was an unmarked grave for a healer no one would remember. A broken empire and a shattered castle."
Oh, God.
Also, just absolutely no mention of Kale.
Yeah, he does not give one single flying fuck about Kale.
He has a mother and a brother that never get mentioned again.
Queen Georgiana. Fuck her off. Look, Dorian looks up from his depressive episode and sees that old mate Gazza has appeared. Gazza is a little bitch, unfortunately. Apparently it runs in the family. Mm. And he's refusing to tell Dorian anything because that means his mate, aka Elena, will die. And he doesn't want that. Even though, funny enough, they're actually already dead.
Shock horror!
Shocking.
It's Elena Gilbert.
Damon! Sherman!
Sherman!
Sherman! Jeremy!
Someone needs to do Jeremy.
Jeremy!
Jeremy!
Bonnie! I actually love that show. Anyway, Dorian is like, stop being a cunt and tell me where I can find the word key. And finally, after some back and forth negotiations, Gazza tells him that the word key is at Morass, which seems like a very obvious place for a...
Shocking enough.
Shocking
at
enough.
The home base.
Yeah. It's at the big bad guy's castle.
Yeah, no, Aaron's just, he's just stashed it under a rock. Mm. He's like, this will do.
Gavin is like, do not go to Morass. It's a bad idea. Not yet, anyways. And Dorian's like, okay, that does sound fair, actually. Before Gavin leaves, Dorian asks Gavin if he's human. And Gavin is like, I don't know. I've been dead for years, so I just have no idea anymore. We get this quote, which is, Dorian dared a step forward. Am I human? Gavin's sapphire eyes softened just barely. I'm not the person who can answer that. I am so loving how many times this particular question comes up and is answered in the same way by so many different people. Manon asked Aleed this, and Aleed was like, I'm not the person who can answer that, when she was like, are monsters like born or made?
Oh, true, I forgot about them.
Yeah, and it comes up again later in this book.
Well, I just like, hate I love it. All of the people that are dead. Like, I hate, yeah. They're all
they're
so,
dead for a reason.
Yeah, they're all so, like, just beaten around the bush. No one has given direct answers. And I understand there's like this whole thing where they can't or whatever, but I'm like, just give us something. Like, he's so like, no, because she's gonna die. And I'm like, she's already dead, you old
she's already
fucking
dead.
Dumb
she
cunt.
Made her choice. We're then in Lorcan's point of view, and the kiddos find out from that commander where they broke his spine, apparently his orders came straight from Doranel. Aleed says that she thinks it would make sense, like the obvious yet simple choice, for Maeve to hold Aelin in like her fortress.
Yeah.
Lorcan is obviously still sulking over Aleed. He's been trying, like, he's been giving his cut-up shirts to Rowan and Gabriel for Aleed when she has a period because she won't accept his help.
Slash Rowan's. Shit.
Rowan has
Rowan's ass. Mm. No one wants to do that. Aleed's been kind of given the shit job, if you will. Lorcan says that the hole in his heart from the blood oath is big, but the hole from losing Aleed is larger. He didn't know why he bothered. He hadn't forgotten her words that day on the beach. I hope you spend the rest of your miserable, immortal life suffering. I hope you spend it alone. I hope you live with regret and guilt in your heart and never find a way to endure it. Her vow, her curse, whatever it had been, had held true, every word of it. He'd broken something, something precious beyond measure. He'd never cared until now. Even with the severed blood oath still gaping wide within his soul, it didn't come close to the hole in his chest when he looked at her. She'd offered him a home in Perrenth, knowing he'd be a dishonored male, offered him a home with her, but it hadn't been Maeve's sundering of that oath that had rescinded that offer. It had been a betrayal so great he didn't know how to fix it.
Oh, that
ripped
hurts.
My heart from my body. That was he deserves it, but it was also sad.
Need I remind you, a mere 3 months ago, she was like, I think I'm falling for you, and he's like, I don't mind being in your presence.
Don't mind being in your existence.
He doesn't mind being in her presence.
It's taken him 3 months from that to I want to be in her eternally.
Yeah.
It's the boobs. It's got to be the boobs.
It has to be the boobs. Or the ankle.
Or the ankle.
Or the humping.
Whatever floats your boats.
Anyway, Aleed goes to pee, and when she's on her way back, Lorcan is like, hey, bitch, what's up? She's like, fuck off. Get out of my fucking face, you giant fuck off dickhead. And he's like, I don't care about the blood oath. I care about you. And she's like, you're a fucking liar. Why would I believe a word you're fucking saying? She's like, I saw you crawl after Maeve. And he's like, no, I didn't crawl to Maeve. I crawled after Aelin. And she's
convenient.
Like, yeah. She's like, wow, that's really funny because they were both heading in the same fucking direction. Suck my tit and fuck off.
She just pulls her right tit out and she's like,
suck it.
Suck it.
He's like, all right, done. We jump to the
Rowan and Gabriel walk out and they're like, what have we missed?
He's got one nipple in his mouth. We jump to the next chapter and we're in Rowan's POV and we get this right off the bat. Prince Rowan Whitethorn Galathinius, consort, husband, and mate of the Queen of Terrasen.
Yes, he is.
Pain.
That
Pain.
Is... What a fucking title.
What a title.
A motherfucking title. I love it.
Then we have this weird moment where Rowan has a pro-life dream. He's dreaming... of Aelin and all their many, many children.
That's not pro-life. That's just like a beautiful family.
I love it because it's pro-life and then they all die.
Because now that they're born, we don't care about them. Honestly, so many children. They really just hammering out those kitties. And then darkness comes and sweeps them all away and he screams. It's terrifying.
Oh, my God. Hello, darkness, my old friend.
This is actually Rowan talking to his future children.
Yeah. There is something, like, weirdly ironic about seeing the mini version of yourself. Like, my son does not... He's like, he looks like my dad, which is kind of weird. My daughter is me. Like, she is just me, but 18 months old. And, like, even her mannerisms, I'm like, you're a right little bitch, aren't you? You are just your mother. And there's something about having those little mini yous where it's like, oh, look at the creations that we made. So Rowan wakes up from the dream and he's like, oh my God, we have babies. This is amazing. But wait, my wife is being imprisoned and tortured and I haven't wiped my asshole in 7 days. So he sits in front of the small fire and he thinks about everything that Aleid had told him on the beach with Maeve, about Lyria and about how Maeve had tricked him into loving the flower whore. And it's like, he's a bit of a dumb fuck for that. I don't really forgive him. If I were Aelin, I'd be like, you impregnated another woman.
And she's a flower whore.
The flower whore, specifically.
Out of all of them, the flower whore.
It's not a good time. It's not a good time. But, I mean, Aelin's a bigger person than I am because she was like, I will kill you for this, Maeve. Where I would have been like, actually, no, I would have killed her for that too, because how dare you make the person I am mated to for my lifetime fuck someone else?
Yeah. It's all on her.
It is all on her. So, yeah, no. So he thinks of what Aelin said to Aelin and her apology for lying to him. And we have a quote. And tell him thank you for walking that dark path with me back to the light. It has been his honor. From the very beginning, it has been his honor, the greatest of his immortal life.
Oh.
An immortal life they would share together somehow. He'd allow for no other alternative. Rowan silently swore it to the stars. He could have sworn the Lord of the North flickered in response.
Oh.
Pain.
Oh, physical pain.
So much.
But now I'm like, imagine if he does die first and he's just like, well, if I'm going, you're coming with me.
Stop it.
I'm ignoring it. I've actually just blocked it out.
Sorry.
Puts another Smartie in her mouth.
It's nothing.
This is how I deal with trauma.
Yeah, you're fucked. You get fucked when it comes to trauma. Anyway.
We're then with Kayla and Irene and they're both being like super smitten and basically Kayla is learning to fight handicapped. We love it. It's great. And they're always fucking, which doesn't seem alarming at all given events. And then we're with Nethrin. Love Nesrin. She's a badass on Uruk with Sartak on his and they're scouting and she's all smitten with him. But she still doesn't know how or why he would want her to be empress like one day. And basically, I just love those two so much. It hurts my soul.
Yes.
They are flying up the coast of Fenharrow and see like 6 stray soldiers and just kill them, yeet them. I love it. And then we're back with Irene and she's counting like medical supplies and Hafizah's like, a dude, chill out. And Irene is like, I actually cannot. And runs her hands along her abdomen and lingers there in the universal sign for Pregante and says that she might not be able to be useful for much longer, which also, fuck off. Babies on the battlefield is problematic, but you are useful when you're pregnant.
Babies on the battlefield! You know what that means, babies. Bazookas, but when they jump out, they've all attached via the umbilical cords and they're running around tripping people over and attacking their legs.
I'm so...
Why must you have brought that up again?
So next chapter, skipping right over the babies. That's the only thing they're good for, just jumping right over them. So anyway, Dorian and Manon are hopping about in the snow.
Just doing some hopscotch.
Little snow bunnies, if you will.
Yeah. Dorian needs to get to Morath. Manon needs to find the Crokins. It's, you know, they've all got things to do, places to be, but they're like, there's always time for hopscotch. Manon...
That's their motto. That's the 13's motto. There's always time for hopscotch.
It's from now until the next hopscotch game.
The hopscotch claims us, yeah. Manon makes the call to travel northward away from Morath, and when they go to head out, a big bear tries to kill Manon. Dorian, like, pins it with his magic hands, and it shapeshifts into a spider. We learn that this spider is the one Manon stole from and is also the one who stole a shapeshifter's youth, and that's why she can shapeshift.
Isn't that interesting?
Dorian thinks that maybe he could pick up the shapeshifting. He's like, oh, maybe I could pick that up, because again, his magic is raw and ever-changing and magical. Manon is going to kill the spider, but then she tells them that she saw Crokins on her way to find them, and she'll take them to the Crokins as long as they keep her alive.
She'll be a little tour guide.
Yeah. Manon is like, no thanks, I'm good. So Dorian's like, whoa, wait a minute. This could be useful, let's not. And Manon and Dorian go toe-to-toe, and we get this moment where Dorian is like, if you want someone to warm your bed who cowers at your every word and obeys every command, look elsewhere. Daddy Dorian. I love it. I love it. The spider basically shapeshifts into a woman's body after that, and they go walking around, because obviously it would be a bit weird if they were just walking around with a giant fuck off horse spider.
Yeah, yeah, they're like, this is my pet. Her name is Serene.
Why Serene?
Oh, that is another name. That's an odd name for you to choose, Brony. Why did you choose that?
I was like, that's really odd.
Out of all of the names, not even a Gazza or a Shazza.
No.
Well, now strap your titties in, because we're back for more trauma. Halen is back, and I'm not prepared for this, but I'm going to call him cunt. Okay, so the cunt comes out and escorts her out. She's got a black hood over her head, and she contemplates running, and I'm like, fucking run. It's not going to get any better if you stay here. But she doesn't, because Fenris has a knife to his throat in his wolf form.
She arrives at the same place where her and Rowan bargained for his freedom from the Blood Oath, and like where there's that like waterfalls all around, and there's all the stones, and Maeve sitting on her throne and whatever. She sees Fenris's brother lying near Maeve's feet in his wolf form, and Maeve puts a crown on Aelin's head, and the crown is Mab's crown.
Oh gosh.
Basically, in front of her there's a circle of shattered glass, and on Maeve's orders, Can pushes her into the shards of glass. And for some reason, this moment when she's like on the shattered glass is 1,000 times worse than any other violence she's shattered.
The glass is forged from old firebringers that have been killed off, so dragons and the like.
That's really good.
Super fun.
Yeah. We get this little quote. A pity that there's no audience to witness this, said Maeve, her voice far away and yet too near. Aelin Firebringer, wearing her proper fairy queen's crown at last, kneeling at my feet. Big giant yikes. Maeve calls Fenris over and tells Connell that he can now tell Fenris how he truly feels. And next minute, Connell turns into his fey form. It's great. It's awesome.
So good.
We're so happy to be here. And at this point as well, Can like pushes her down onto the glass harder, and Fenris turns to her and blinks 4 times because he's here and he's with her.
At this stage, Connell has also just ripped into Fenris and just verbally abused his brother about how worthless he is.
Yep.
So that's awesome. Maeve asks Aelin to swear the Blood Oath and tell her where the word keys are. And Aelin gives Maeve an obscene gesture, which we love, because even when she's going through the absolute shittest, she is like, fuck you, you're a cunt.
Yep.
Maeve lets Aelin sit there in agony, constantly being pushed down into the glass by Can, while Maeve is just like having a snack on some grapes and wine. Then she grows bored of it and is like, I had my eyes see your man and you in Terrasen. Isn't that interesting? And Aelin, this whole time, she's kind of still had hope that Rowan was coming for her, even though she'd told him to go to Terrasen. But now she's like, oh fuck, Rowan isn't coming. He's reached Terrasen. Like, yay, but also, wow, I'm actually hopeless.
Oh, it's a lie, Aelin.
It's a lie. Maeve is like, I'll make necessary sacrifices for this war, Aelin, and then tells Connell to do it. Connell takes a step towards Fenris like a zombie and lifts, like, shaking hands above his head, wielding a knife. Aelin's freaking out. Fenris is snarling at him. Aelin is screaming for Fenris. And when we think that Connell is about to kill Fenris, Connell instead plunges the knife into his own heart. Cool. Even, like, the owl on Maeve's throne, like, flaps its wings as if in horror. and Fenris is howling as Connell dies.
Oh.
And he's just forced to fucking watch.
So terrible.
So Aelin lets the crown tumble off her head and plunge into the ravine. She falls onto the glass and then Maeve tells her to leave. And as Can picks her up and she literally, because she's like fallen into the glass and Maeve is like, okay, get her out of here. And Can like picks her up and she, like, as she's getting up, she has a shard of glass in her hand and she just fucking stabs him in the neck and then turns and hauls a piece of glass directly at Maeve and it hits her on the cheek. And when her cheek bleeds, the blood runs black.
Oh my God.
Not as a trickle of blood snaked down Maeve's cheek, black blood, as dark as night, as dark as the eyes that the queen fixed on her, a hand rising to her cheek. But then, in a blink, the blood is red. But we fucking saw it.
Yeah. And Aelin, like, this whole time while they're torturing her, they are, like, blacking her out. They're healing her after each torturing, so she's completely fine. And then they do it again, so she doesn't know what is real and what isn't, and she wonders if she's dreamt it. But we know.
We know. So Fenris enters the chamber where Aelin is now laid on the altar. She's still got glass stuck all in her knees, all in her legs. He's not in his wolf form, but he's in his fey form. We get this quote. Fenris didn't enter until long after she'd awoken. The blood was still leaking from where Can had also left the glass in her legs, her feet. It was not a wolf who slipped into the stone chamber, but a male. Each of Fenris's steps told her enough before she beheld the deadness of his eyes. The pallor of his usually golden skin. He stared at nothing, even as he stopped before where she lay chained. She blinks three times for, are you okay? And he blinks twice for no.
They hold hands and she notes that his shirt is unbuttoned and, I mean, considers what he likely had to do to serve Maeve while his brother lay dead at her feet.
Jesus.
Like, that's just fucked. They cry. It's just fucked. Apparently, Maeve will allow him to take the glass out of her legs, and then he has to go back into his wolf form. Aelin continues to cry because she thinks that Rowan isn't coming for her, and they both end up just crying together.
Oh.
We then go back to the gang in Terrasen, and Lysandra is in battle. The soldiers still think Aelin is on her way to them, so she's in, like, a ghost leopard form, and they're fighting the Vaug soldiers, 5,000 of them, who have come from the elderly man who's not moisturised. we get this quote, which is, so Lysandra kept killing the blood of her enemy like spoiled wine on her tongue. Wow.
Ooh,
wow.
It's kind of hot.
It's kind of hard. They win this battle and Adian and a few leaders are going over a map, like considering what they lost, which was like all in all, like good outcome from the battle. They only lost like 300 troops. So they're kind of like, okay. And then we have this moment where a messenger comes into the tent and it is at page 106 in my book, because I noted it. Nox Owen is back. He is apparently Lord Darrow's most trusted messenger now, and we fucking know. We know.
We fucking know.
I'm so happy to see him.
Oh, welcome back, Nox. You've been missed.
Yeah.
So Darrow wants them to meet with him to stop them from possibly heading further south, which, thanks so much, Darrow. Really appreciate your work. Adian goes to see older men, drinks with them, eats with them, and then he stumbles upon Lysandra. She says that she can fly to Darrow and deliver a message if he thinks it's easier to give the army a chance to rest, but Adian's just being a little fucking cunt.
Yeah.
We get this moment where Adian says, just as you blindly obey our queen, you'll now obey me. And Lysandra says, I obey no man, but I'm not fool enough to believe I know more about armies and soldiers than you. My pride is not so easily bruised.
Fucking shame.
She tells him that everything was real to her and that it might not have been for him, but it would always be real to her. And he basically tells her to fuck off, and my heart honestly breaks for her in this moment.
Same.
And she's, like, walking back to, like, a tent, and her heart is just absolutely breaking, and she feels sick because of it. She just basically walks straight into her tent and falls asleep. She's just...
Oh.
Then the next chapter, we jump to Kale, Nesrin, Irene, Hassar, and Sartak. They're all having a council meeting. It's all of the Jolly Ranchers all in one little box.
oh, dear.
The soldiers that Sartak and Nesrin intercepted said that they were heading for Anil.
I know. Kale's arsehole.
I know. They were heading straight for Kale's arsehole.
Yep. They were like, Doreen might not care about you, but we do, actually.
We do, yeah.
Care about your ass.
We do. They wonder if the city is worth saving, but Irene is like, that's my fucking husband's, that's his home, bros. That's his people's. We've got to go. And they decide, yes, okay, we will go. They're going to save Anil, and then they're going to head through the Ferian Gap, beat the witches, and then head toward Terezin. Great plan. Will go to plan. They're a week behind the soldiers, though, so Kale and Irene are going on the Rooks to warn his father about the incoming army. Then the Rooks and the foot soldiers will follow thereafter. And now we get to meet Daddy Kale, which, you know, who the fuck really gives a fuck about Daddy Kale?
Yeah, we don't give a fuck, so we're going to leave him behind, and then we're in the next chapter, which, forewarning, chapter 12 is absolutely fucked.
Yeah.
And get ready for possibly the biggest quote of this book. I think it might be. I put a whole page in, and I am reading the whole goddamn thing. You can't stop me. I'm the one recording it. Ha ha. We start off with Aelin crying in the coffin she's been put in. She thinks that she would do this for Terezin. She would let them break her and put her back together over and over again. But she has hit a real low. She has lost all of her hope.
Yeah, because, again, I don't know if we've made this clear, but they're literally, like, breaking her apart bone by bone and then, healing her back together so that when she wakes up, she's totally normal again. And she's like, as Bryony said earlier, she doesn't know if it's a dream, or if it really happened, if it didn't.
She's lost all of her scars, all of her tattoos. Yeah. Her hair is super, super long because they're growing it out so much for what they're doing to her. Like, it's just a whole fucking traumatizing situation. And then we get this entire page of quotes. Again, fight me. She was so tired. So, so tired. For Terezin, she had gladly done this, all of it. For Terezin, she deserved to pay this price. She had tried to make it right, had tried and failed. And she was so, so tired. Fireheart, the whispered word floated through the eternal night, a glimmer of sound of light. Fireheart, the woman's voice was soft, loving, her mother's voice. Aelin turned her face away. Even that movement was more than she could bear. Fireheart, why do you cry? Aelin could not answer. Fireheart, the words were a gentle brush down her cheek. Fireheart, why do you cry? And from far away, deep within her, Aelin whispered towards that ray of memory, because I am lost and I do not know the way. Cairn was still talking, still scraping his knife over the coffin's lid, but Aelin did not hear him as she found a woman lying beside her, a mirror of a reflection of the face she'd bear in a few years' time, should she live that long. Borrowed time. Every moment of it had been borrowed time. Evelyn Ashriver ran gentle fingers down Aelin's cheek. Over the mask, Aelin could have sworn she felt them against her skin. You have been very brave, her mother said. You have been very brave for so very long. Aelin couldn't stop the silent sob that worked its way up her throat. But you must be brave a little while longer, my fire heart. She leaned into her mother's touch. You must be brave a little while longer and remember. Her mother placed a phantom hand over Aelin's heart. It is the strength of this that matters. No matter where you are, no matter how far, this will lead you home. Aelin managed to slide a hand up to her chest to cover her mother's fingers. Only thin fabric and iron met her skin,
but Evelyn Ashriver held Aelin's gaze, the softness turning hard and gleaming as fresh steel. It is the strength of this that matters, Aelin. Aelin's fingers dug into her chest as she mouthed, the strength of this. Evelyn nodded. Cairn's hissed threats danced through the coffin, his knife scraping and scraping. Evelyn's face didn't falter. You are my daughter. You were born of two mighty bloodlines. That strength flows through you, lives in you. Evelyn's face blazed with the fierceness of the women who had come before them, all the way back to the fairy queen whose eyes they both bore. You do not yield. Then she was gone, like dew under the morning sun, but the words lingered, blossomed within Aelin, bright as a kindled ember. You do not yield. Cairn scraped his dagger over the metal right above her head. When I cut you up this time, bitch, I'm going to... Aelin slammed her hand into the lid and Cairn paused. Aelin pounded her fist into the iron again. You do not yield. Again. You do not yield. Again. Until she was alive with it. Until her blood was raining onto her face, washing away the tears. Until every pound of her fist into the iron was a battle cry. You do not yield. You do not yield. You do not yield. It rose in her, burning and roaring, and she gave herself wholly to it.
Oh my fucking God.
Like, when I tell you, I was hysterically sobbing.
Absolutely. Like, there were just tears.
Because at first, she's so low. Like, she's in that so really low. Bad, hopeless place. And then she sees her fucking dead mother's ghost.
And you're like, Mama.
Whoa. And then she's like, actually, you know what? I'm going to fuck some shit up.
Yeah. And she fucking does. She fucking does. But when she wakes, because basically they send, like, Gloriella in smoke form into the chamber to put her to sleep. And when she wakes up, she's on the altar. And she sees what she did to the coffin. There is a huge fuck-off dent put in it. And it's so close to breaking. Like, she came so close to breaking out. We then jump to Rowan and the Scooby Gang, who are traveling, when a surge of power comes from Danelle. It's a giant magical fart.
Giant magical fart.
Yep. And he would really let one rip.
She's been sitting on it.
Yeah. And he would recognize that smell. Anywhere.
Absolutely anywhere.
He sends a message down the bond. I will find you. Oh. And basically their plan is they're going to draw Maeve out so that they can go in and rescue Aelin.
Menon and Dorian have found the Crokins back on the continent thanks to the spider. They approach this camp and obviously, the Crokin witches are on guard because Manon and the 13 have showed up, and that's a problem. In anyone's language, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Manon, like, has her hands up. She's like, don't shoot, even though we don't have guns. The leader, a crone, comes forward, and she was Rhiannon's great-grandmother. So she is Manon's grandmother. Grandmummy, it's me, Glenys.
Glenys!
Manon and Dorian are going into the camp led by Manon's great-grandmother, Glenys, and Dorian is trying to, like, loosen Manon up, but not in a fun way, but, like...
He's just, bend over, darling, let me just get the loop and loosen blast. Up the anus.
Yeah, but unfortunately two iron teeth covens attack them. Dorian is then, like, attempting to shoot down wyverns with his magic, but the Crokins are all moving around on their brooms up in the air and it's too difficult. Dorian and Glenys basically fire shots together, her with her bow and him with his magic, and we get this interchange where Glenys grinned, that aged face lighting. I struck first, she drew another arrow. Such lightness, even in the face of an ambush. Wish you were my great-grandmother, Dorian muttered.
It's just such, like, a light-hearted, you know, interchange during, like, such a shit time. So I'd really like that. But, yeah, so they fight together and then a Wyvern and Ryder get too close and Manon cuts the head off the Ryder and it rolls towards Dorian and he snaps back into a memory of a head rolling on a marble floor. And then that's we get problem. This quote. I was not supposed to love you. The yellow leg's head halted near his boots, the blue blood gushing onto the snow and dirt. He didn't hear. He didn't care. The wyvern swept down and darkness yawned wide as those jaws closed around him, as Dorian let his magic rip free of its tethers. One heartbeat, the wyvern was swallowing him whole, its rancid breath staining the air. The next, the beast was on the ground, corpse steaming from what he'd done to it. Not to it, but to himself. The body he'd turned into solid flame, so hot it had melted through the wyvern's jaws, its throat, and he had passed through the beast's mouth as if it was nothing but a cobweb.
Whoa. It's the steaming. It's the cobweb.
So fucking hot. And, like, Manon literally screaming his name. Like, ooh. Are you kidding me?
Oh.
Are you kidding me?
It's just, whoa.
It's everything. It's every moment. It's everything I needed it to be. The Crokins, like, the initial Crokin that they spoke to, which is Bronwyn, she's like, you fucker, Manon. You brought them here. And Manon swears that she didn't. But you remember the truth sword?
Damaris.
Yeah. Yasmin's sword. It goes cold, which means that it's a lie.
She's lying.
So that's not very good.
No. Manon is obviously feeling a little bit bad about luring Iron Teeth witches to the camp to try and show how important and valuable she can be to the Crokins. And we have this quote, which is, she was a liar and a killer and would likely have to be both again before this was through. Yikes.
Big yikes.
Manon and Dorian are eating with Glenys and Bronwyn, even, like, though Bronwyn hates Manon. And Glenys is like, wow, we haven't, like, eaten a meal with an Iron Teeth for yonks. Manon tells them that she has come to ask for their aid on behalf of Aelin to help in the war between Erewhon and them. And Bronwyn is like, how about you actually just fuck off because we know you've been a cunt. And Glenys is like, how about we talk about your daddy, Tristan.
Dorian, such an odd name.
Right, just really came out of left field there. Dorian decides to leave them for this really awkward family bonding, which is fair. I would also leave that conversation. And he decides to go and chat with the spider. They're talking about shifting, and she tells him that he just has to want to be something, and he's like, that sounds sick. The spider tells him that the magic is in her, and he brings out his magic and, like, does this whole thing where he, like, kind of probes her, and then his magic wraps around it like a seed.
He probes her.
And then he realizes, as he's, like, holding on this little precious magic seed, he realizes that she's a Vulg and is like, well, that is actually a trigger for me, so I'm going to snap your neck with my daddy phantom hands.
He literally grabs hold of her ball sack inside her body.
And he's actually like, yeet, grab, like, it's a whole moment. It's just wowzers. Manon comes into the tent because, yes, they are obviously sharing a tent, but again, they're not labelling things, it's fine. She asks for his advice. Dorian gives it to her, and then he gives it to her. He says that she needs to rally the Crokins to them, and she needs them to need her as much as she needs them, which is very straightforward, good advice, Dorian. Thank you for that.
Yes.
And then they fuck in honour of the dead spider, which seems super cool. And we get this quote, which is, no hint of those iron teeth, but the promise of them lingered, an exquisite sword over his head. Only with her did he not need to explain. Only with her did he not need to be a king or anything but what he was. Only with her would there be no judgment for what he'd done, who he'd failed, what he might still have to do. Just this, pleasure and utter oblivion. Wowzers.
Well.
It's hot, okay? He's broken, it's so fucking and hot. I love it.
He's so broken and we need it. When Manon wakes the next morning, she goes to see Glenys and asks her what she has to do to summon the Crokins to help. And Glenys is like, oh, well, all you've got to do is, like, you got to go take that fire. Yep, you see that one just over there, sitting over there? Yep, that one. And then you got to pass it around to all the other Crokin clans. And Manon's like, oh, so it's just that easy, is it? And Glenys is like, no. Obviously not, you fucking idiot. You have to first be accepted as the Crokin Queen for us to allow you to even touch that fucking fire.
It's a very sacred fire.
Exactly. And Glenys tells Manon that they are on their way to Ilwe to help another clan fight the monsters from Morath. And Manon is like, no, come north. And Glenys is like, suck my asshole. No.
Suck my asshole, granddaughter.
Yes.
Adian arrives to see Darrow with the army and he's like, what do you want, old man? And Darrow, the stupid fuck that he is like, I just want to chat with you, my bro. So he's just exhausted an entire fucking army, making them move after a big battle because he wants to assert his power.
Exactly. Awesome.
They meet with the lords and the commanders of the army, and Lysandra is now back as Aelin. Darrow tells her to get lost, but Adine is like, actually, no, I've made Aelin my second in command, which is a good little loophole. We love it. Yes. Ansel is there, and Rowan's cousins are there. Ilias is there. Basically, all of the allies that came to help Aelin have showed up. The lords vote to go back to Orinth, obviously, because they want to protect their own little houses and fuck the peasants. Obviously, the others vote to go to the border of Orinth, so it's 4-2, and Darrow says that the allies can leave if they like, which just seems super fucking stupid.
Super fucking stupid.
And then we have this glorious moment where all of the allies turn to Aelin and pledge their allegiance to her, and the lords of Terrazin are like, and it's like, haha, fuck off. Nekmin, Nox walks in, sees Aelin, and is like, wait a goddamn minute. And then tells Darrow that there is a messenger from old man elderly, dehydrated, not moisturized man, whatever the fuck we call him. Plot twist, the messenger is actually a Varg and he unleashes a wave of darkness upon them all, so that's problematic. It hits Lysandra's arm, but before it can do anything else, everyone slams in to protect her, but the Varg sniffs her and then is like, oh my god, don't I have the interesting goss? And basically his eyes roll back in his head and you can tell he's passing a message along whatever bonds the Varg have with Erewhon, basically telling him that Aelin isn't there. They cure the Varg, but it's too late. The message has gone through. Lysandra and Adian are freaking out after this and they don't know how Erewhon will take it, what he'll do, and they decide to make a move and it's not to go to Orinth. And this is I give a huge shout out to my boy Nox, the man I'm actually marrying from this book because everyone else is nearly paired up or too traumatized. Nox knows that Lysandra isn't Aelin because, like, he explains how he knew Selena and she hadn't recognized him, so he knows. And Nox says that he owes Selena a life debt for what happened in book one and that he serves her and Terrasen. Lysandra trusts him as she should, and gets him to secretly drug all of the Terrasen lords, so when they fall asleep tonight, they won't wake up until the army is long gone. The army follows their true queen, and they just leave the lords there.
But catch you later, suckers.
I love that. I love it so much.
It's such a good moment.
It doesn't end well, but, you know, it's good at the moment.
No, yeah, true. So next chapter, Irene and Kale arrive and Kale's daddy's there. He's being a little cunt as per usual. And he's like, oh, you're with a peasant? Great. So that's good.
Irene's basically problematic class, like racism there.
Yeah, look. And that's it. He really is just like, he looks her up and down, does the whole like, oh, cool. Irene is like, suck my arsehole, and we're all here for that, so that's good.
Love it.
Kale tells his father that he needs to prepare to be sacked. Let someone's going to come through and just give him a straight sack tap.
I love you're like that, and I'm like, HR is going to show up and say, actually, we're letting you go. And
yeah, no mind, is someone's like crawled underneath him and just sack tapped him.
Oh my god.
And Daddy Kale is like, oh, fuck, all right, you don't need to tell me what to do. I know. And Kale's like, it's either that or you die and your people die. So sort out what you fucking need to do.
All right.
Kale tells him that Erewhon is coming from all directions. Like, you need to cover your asshole, your mouth, your vagina.
Erewhon is like, every hole is a goal.
Exactly. Yes. But he's not coming through the White Fang Mountains, so his daddy really should rally the people from the mountains to help his people. But daddy's like, no, And Cal's like, well, I did try to warn you. So just remember that, you dumb fuck.
Absolute dumb fuck.
The next day, the Rooks arrive and Nesrin tells them that the Valg are 3 to 4 days off and they look fucking crazy. Like, they look like they're ready, they're raw to go, like, just ready to just absolutely tear in and eat some people's assholes. But there's no sign of the witches. So that's, I guess, a positive question mark? Maybe.
Very big question mark there. We know what happens and that's just horrifying.
Exactly.
I'm back with Maeve and she is now telling her story of a queen to Aelin, which we have another quote because, of course, we do. Long ago, when the world was new, when there was no human kingdoms, when no wars had marred the earth, a young queen was born. Don't take our girl's words. Don't.
Yeah.
Don't take our girl's words and twist them to your narrative, Maeve.
Do not plagiarise her. She's worked hard on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So if you cast your minds back to last week's episode, where I gave you the synopsis of the three crazy brothers and Taylor Swift.
That's how it was, Kanye, Vladimir Putin, and Andrew Tate.
Yeah, we had a few. So we've got our three, you know, suspicious men, and we have our queen. And our queen, T-Swift, she was born with crazy power, and she ruled over her small land until these three bastard kings came to claim her hand in marriage, because that's all a woman is good for.
Hmm.
So she chose the eldest brother, which in this scenario would be Pooty, for his libraries, because he had a huge dick library with loads of books and knowledge in them. And, you know, we would all choose his brother as well. So in those libraries, she learns that there are other worlds, worlds that she can't even begin to imagine, which kind of trips me out. Just even thinking about space is overwhelming, so I wouldn't like that knowledge. But as her world was dark and gloomy and there wasn't any colour there, she basically learns that there are other worlds on top of each other. So they're stacked like a pancake, if you will. A pancake stack.
Yeah. Oh, I could go some pancakes.
So did I.
So when her husband, Pooty, goes off to war, fitting, of course Pooty goes off to war.
Oh, yeah.
She takes her handmaidens, which, again, fitting, because we know T-Swift likes to surround herself with a gaggle of bad bitches.
It's just a bad blood video.
It is. So off they trot and they go to a new world where she was made a queen and hid herself so thoroughly that when Pooty and his brothers came to find her, they did not recognize her. No, no, no. So she banished Pooty and one of the brothers back to their realm. She just sort of flicked them back off into the ether. And the other brother, well, Andrew Tate, he was gravely injured and he slithered off to be sealed away, which is kind of true because he's been banned off of all social media platforms. So
yeah,
it's been nice not seeing him.
It has been. So T-Swift starts learning how to open doors, really. She's just like, I've won a Grammy. What else can I do? So she opens a small door first to speak with a wayfarer, which, interesting, I don't know what that is. Is it like a surfer? This wayfarer refuses to tell her how to walk through worlds. So she's just like, well, it's a good thing I'm clever. It's a good thing I'm a woman because I can do this myself.
Absolutely.
So she's been preparing her people for war, the Swifties, since that day. But she needs to find the keys to lock the gate that allowed them to enter into this world because she doesn't want Pooty and Kanye finding her.
Absolutely not. No. No one wants her. No. That sounds like an awful weekend.
Absolutely.
Yeah, shit. So Maeve asks Aelin where she thinks the keys are. And Aelin has this moment where she looks at her wrists and sees a shadow of a scar, her shackle. But in this world, it doesn't exist. And she gets this weird feeling because she's like, I don't know who Vladimir Putin is. And I feel like I should. So yeah. The answer to your question is no.
Mm.
And Maeve goes, well, now you're just not playing anymore. And she snaps Rowan's neck.
Oh.
I just wanted to know what the vibe was. Like, what do we think that is? Because I like to make these weird, like, I like to draw conclusions from each of the book series that I read. And I want to make it so that there's all these links, even if they're non-existent.
I want there to be links.
Yeah, there is that girl on TikTok with the whiteboard and the spatula that she really does that as well.
I don't know. I just feel like there are
this Wayfarer situation,
or like there are like there's obviously like the bone carver and stuff in
the
like,
death gods.
The death gods and Akatar, there's like oracles and stuff. Like, I just want there to be more, you know? And I'm like, is there like a possibility of like she's opened this small door to another realm and it's something from
that we know?
Yeah. It's the surreal.
And the surreal's like,
she's no tea for you.
I've got some tea for you, sis.
I got some tea.
Actually, no, fuck you. You're not getting to find out.
Yeah, literally. She's like, yeah. It's like, stay with the High Lord. She's like, what does that mean?
This is the wrong book.
Anyway, that's just me wanting to like draw conclusions. So
yeah, there's a couple things that when we finish Kingdom of Ash are like left open in the air, like that Eastern Kingdom and thing like that, that I hope we get some future books to like go into.
Yeah. Let's refer. Let's link back, you know?
As I said, Maeve Crackalax, Rowan's hawk form neck, and Aelin is not okay. Ooh. Aelin wakes up on the altar with her arms shattered. She's screaming because she can still feel the echo of the mating bond snapping, of her bones snapping, and she looks to her wrist, but the scars have healed, and it's just a whole fucking hot mess. Maeve tells her that she's actually going to go on a holiday for a couple of days. She's accrued enough annual leave, and she's going on a vacay. So she's going to kill one of Erewhon's princes, who is now apparently just chilling on Maeve's continent. Apparently he brought a handful of collars, and Maeve's decided it seems like a great idea to kill this person and take the collars and put Aelin in one. She's like, I've actually got a fetish that I'd really like to try out with you. It's a couple hours later and Aelin is still on the altar. Fenris is in the corner and he blinks 3 times. Are you okay? She blinks back twice, being no, and he blinks 4 times, meaning I'm here, I'm with you, and she blinks the same back. Screaming. Things get even more stressful. We're already super stressed and we're getting more stressed. Can comes in and is like, yo, time to go. And they plonk her in an iron box and move her.
Fucking big yikes.
I'm getting so stressed. I'm like, why are we moving her? It's number one, like, self-defense. Don't let them move you. She can't
stop them.
Don't let
them move you. And yeah, she's in the box.
She's in the box.
What's in the box? Box?
What's in the box? It's Aelin. Oh.
Aelin.
Oh, gosh. So we jump to the next chapter and we find out that the Wordstone collars were actually a trap set by Rowan and the gang. Sneaky buggers. We love that.
Sneaky buggers.
They're trying to find Maeve. They end up finding like a host of warriors just like out and about and like a huge army of Fae. A lead offers to go and head out to question some people about like Cairn and Aelin and Maeve, just like very subtly, nothing crazy. She's not like, where the fuck are they? She's like, oh,
yeah. Because believe it or not, the 3 Fae males are quite recognisable.
Yes.
You know, being war heroes, renowned Fae warriors, people might be like, whoa, what are you doing?
Yes.
So they see this wee little girl with her boobs out and they're like, yes, you seem friendly.
Rowan and Gavriel agree that they're like, look, yeah, we're not happy about it, but it's the only plan that we've got. So displeasure and all, fuck it
it's
up.
It's happening.
Lysandra is flying overhead in hawk form back with them, basically to see what size army is coming for them. She sees 50,000 Valg, 5 princes, and a legion of Ilken.
That's a problem.
Oh, and they only have 25,000, just for reference. So the armies basically end up meeting near Terrasen, and the battle begins. It goes 2 days, and the Bane's lines begin to, like, wobble. They're wobbling. Wobbly knees.
Alib goes on her journey. She pretends to be like a sad lover of Cairns and approaches some Fey warriors at a tavern. She asks them if they know him and they say no. She pretends to be like sad, fragile and broken, and they still say that they don't know where he is. They're like, go the fuck away.
Yeah, she don't have sympathy for you.
Yeah. <Stop working. laughs> So she leaves, but then she is like pretending to go to another tavern and she's like fixing her like smudged eye makeup when one of the warriors who was, you know, at the tavern, one of the fays, they approach her. We then flash to Lorcan and the guys who are waiting, and Lorcan is pacing. He is stressed. He is drawing a line in the sand with his little scuffles because he's walking so viciously. He is extremely worried about Alib. He thinks that he's going to die, that she's going to die, and that it's just he's going to die because she's dying, and it's the whole thing. But there she is, toddling or limping along back up the hill. Alib thought she was going to die, but it turns out the woman who she approached was Essar, and he was actually Lorcan's lover.
Mm.
Oh my god, Ellie would be fucking quaking.
Ellie's like, what do you mean?
I know I don't like that man right now.
Yeah.
However,
he's still not allowed to have another person.
No. Don't you put this shit in my face. I will find another person that has information on the whereabouts of my
Queen. But she ends up telling Alib that Cairn is on the eastern camp and she's unsure of his precise location nor if he's with Aelin or not, but Maeve has gone somewhere else. They chat and Alib tells the boys that the watch is the weakest at dawn at the eastern camps, so they prep and they will make their move at dawn. So that's good. Ooh,
that's very early. It is a bit of a sleepy.
Rise and shine.
That's how Alib greets him in the morning. Rowan, it's time to wipe your bum.
So Rowan takes some time to himself to be sad, and we get this absolute soul-shattering moment. He had killed his way across the world. He had gone to war and back more times than he cared to remember. And despite it all, despite the rage and despair and ice he'd wrapped around his heart, he'd still found Aelin. Every horizon he gazed towards, unable and unwilling to rest during those centuries, every mountain and ocean he'd seen and wondered what lay beyond, it had been her. It had been Aelin, the silent call of the mating bond driving him, even when he could not feel it. They'd walked this dark path together, back to the light. He would not let the road end here. Screaming, crying, sobbing.
He does vengeance well. He wears a bomb. We leave our beautiful, beautiful Batman, Rowan. And we are now with Manon and the 13. And they are planning to follow the Crokins if they go south. Because remember, that's part of the plan. You know?
Correct.
Manon and Astrin are trying to win over the Crokins. So they walk toward a particular witch because she seems like an easy target. They're like, we will weasel our way in with the weakest and work our way through the top.
Absolutely.
That's their game plan. So she's tending to the Wyverns and she tells them that Abraxos is like a dog. And I was like, yes. Yes, he is, which is why we love him so dearly.
He's also like a dragon from a Pixar film, if you've seen How to Train Your Dragon.
Toothless.
Abraxos is just a little wee pup. And then this witch tells them that Abraxos is mated with Astrin's blue wyvern. And they're like, sorry, what? And she's like, yeah.
Can't you see it?
Look at the way they look at each other. They're vibing.
And even like,
they're like Astrin, snuggled at the time too. They're
yeah. Like... Astrin and Manon are then like looking at them being like, really? And Abraxos is looking at them like, have you only just figured it out? Your gaydar is just absolutely off track.
Oh, the beautiful little sausages. I just love them so much. Only to be torn apart. But anyway, so Dorian, meanwhile, he's attempting to shift specifically his eye color. So he's got beautiful blue sapphire eyes. He wants them to be brown. But it's not quite working. So as he's trying to do this, he and Manon are sitting close together and she's like, it's not working. you're a fucking idiot. It's not working. So then they start talking and about caring about things, because that's what we do when we start a new relationship. We pretend to care about the things that other people like cricket, for example. I now still have to watch cricket 10 years later.
Moral of the story, don't pretend anymore. Just dislike them from the beginning.
Yeah.
So they're caring about things. They're realizing things. And Manon starts to get pissy because she's like, I am 117 years old and I hate everything, including cricket, and that will not change. And Dorian is like, but do you? He's out here with the existential shit. Manon stays with Sorrel and Astrin until she realizes that 3 to a tent sucks, and she goes back to get that dick.
It's actually just the three of us in bed spooning, and we're like, look, it's a bit crowded because we've all had a bit of sugary drinks, and both Georgia and I are shaking like crack addicts.
Bryony's gone to go to the toilet at 3 a.m. repeatedly.
Georgia fell asleep mid-sentence. Ellie's just hanging on for dear life, trying to enjoy her time away from her children.
So when they awake the next morning, Manon looks over at him as she's getting dressed, and she's like, holy fucking shit, your eyes are poo brown, and just leaves him there. And he's like, wowza. Wow.
Wow.
Because do you know why it worked? Because he opened up. They pulled a Kylie Jenner and they began to realize shit.
And he was vulnerable and open about his emotional well-being. And she was like, I can hold space for you in my vagina. And he was like, perfect. My eyes are bright.
Exactly where I want to be.
So when you started talking about holding space and vulnerability, I'm like, that sounds an awful lot like gentle parenting. But then you said in my vagina, I was like, no.
That doesn't sound like gentle parenting. That sounds like shoving Jeanette, them back up where they came from.
I really hope that's not gentle parenting. I guess that's incredibly problematic.
Jeanette Lansby would never. Okay, so now we're off to Ilwe. Which also, side note, I have a bit of a gripe here. I remember after that death, Aelin writing a letter to Nehemia's parents saying, like, giving them an oath, wasn't she? She was like, I will ensure the survival.
The crown is returned to your father's head.
Yeah, well, we don't meet them ever.
No, never.
We have a lot of stuff happening on the fringe of Ilwe, and that's
and
it.
They and they write really to each other at the end.
Yeah.
Like, they exchange further correspondence, but
I just wanted her death. Like, I know it meant a lot to Aelin, and like she had the scar on her hand before the scar was ripped off and all of those things, but it would have been really full circle if she had gone back to Ilwe to meet her parents and been like, your daughter
it meant so much to me.
Yeah.
I just feel like Nehemia's character arc could have been so much better. Like, could have been better handled. Like,
yes.
I feel like it. Like, I get to this point now where I'm like, I don't really even care about Nehemia's character, because I'm like, what did she do?
Yeah.
And what did it lead to at the end of the day? Like, yeah, it kind of paved the way, but it would have been fine if she just had Lena, really. Did she even need Nehemia doing these things?
It is definitely something that I feel like if Sarah J. Maas had written it as an older author with someone with a bit more, like, it wasn't her second book she'd ever written, it definitely could have been handled differently. I still think it's got its role in the story. I just don't think it's the best way that character could have served the story.
I feel like it didn't have the wrap-up that it needed. It didn't have, like,
there should have been something else here at the end that really brought
it in and like made us be like, right, that
why
makes sense.
Yeah.
And also when you consider, I've only just started reading House of Earth and Blood, and the death in that happens in like the first,
chapter 5.
Chapter. Yeah. In that book, that struck me probably more than Nehemia's death, because
that's
she just established that. Yeah. But she established that friendship so strongly right from the get go.
In so, and like 5 chapters.
Yeah. And I just feel like we didn't get that with Nehemia.
Yeah. No. It's definitely something that you can definitely see the age of Sarah.
The progress, in her as an author. Yep.
So Aelin is in a tent. She's chained to a metal table and Fenris is there and Fenris is growling at Ken. Ken is basically like, I'm going to see how your body reacts to flame, you know? And it's basically like Aelin struggling against her own magic because her magic is fire. And we get this quote, this wasn't just a breaking of her body, but a breaking of her, of the fire she'd come to love, to destroy the part of her that sang. Oh, that's really fucking sad. Aelin decides that she will not let Maeve put a collar on her. And then we get this other fucked up quote. Aelin made herself meet his stare, her gauntlet-covered fingers pressing into the iron slab beneath her. One last chance. She'd seen the stars overhead. It was as great a gift as any as she'd received. Greater than the jewels and the gowns and the art she'd once coveted and amassed in Rifthold. The last gift she would receive if she played the hand she'd been dealt. If she'd played him right to end this and her before Maeve could put the Wordstone collar around her neck. Rot-roll.
We jump to Rowan's point of view and Dawn is approaching. They've located Cairn's tent and Rowan, like, is waiting for the plan to kick in. But he gets this voice in his ear telling him to go, go now. And he doesn't leave it to chance and spears his magic towards the entrance of the camp. We get this quote, which is, a killing calm had settled over him hours ago, days ago, months ago. And again, you guys all know how I feel about a killing calm.
Oh my God.
So Rowan's decided he's going to follow that voice. And we get this other quote. So Rowan steeled himself, willing ice into his veins, calm, precise, deadly. Every swing of his blades, every blast of his power had to count. Rowan speared his magic toward the camp entrance. The guards grabbed for their throats, feeble shields wobbling around them. Rowan shattered them with half a thought, his magic tearing the air from their lungs, their blood. They went down a heartbeat later. Sentries shouted from the trees, orders of sound the alarm ringing out. But Rowan was already running, and the sentries in the trees, their shouts lingering on the wind as they gasped for breath, were already dead.
That's a pretty cool parallel. I'd like
to. It's so hot. And this is where I remind everyone who's watched Avatar The Last Airbender, the airbenders, they're really fucking scary, actually, when you think about it. They're nice, friendly people, but they could fuck you up if they wanted to.
The context is lost from me, but I believe you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Chapter 26 is the fight of Aelin provoking Cairn to try and kill her. So Aelin provokes Cairn by calling him nothing, spineless, and he decides, fuck this shit, and unchains her from the table as Fenris starts whining behind them.
Oh, the whining.
Cairn smashes Aelin's face against a metal table. Metal table meat face is not an ideal meat cue. It's not what you want. We do get this quote. There had always been another, a spare to take her place should you fail, that her death would mean Dorian's, would send those hateful gods to demand his life to forge the lock. It was no strange thing to hate herself for it. She'd failed enough people, failed Terrasen, that the additional weight barely landed. She wouldn't have much longer to feel it anyway.
Oh, no.
Cairn then holds her face against the flames, trying to burn her, and Fenris is, like, barking and snarling and whining behind them. She manages to get a few good punches in, but it's no use while she's still shackled. As she goes to make a final run, he grabs her and slams her into a chest of drawers, and a loud crack sounds through her body.
Not good.
Not good. And when I tell you I was so distressed reading this, like, you're like, fuck, fuck, fuck. When she hits the ground, she makes this, like, small sound. And Fenris thinks it is the most quiet, hopeless sound he has ever heard. And he is so, so worried. We get these quotes. She blinked at him 4 times. I am here. I am with you. Fenris knew it for what it was. The final message. Not before death, but before the sword of breaking that no one could walk away from. Before Maeve returned with that Wordstone collar.
Yeah,
look. We're all very, very stressed at this stage.
Yeah, the whole thing's just fucked. But our boy Fenris, he refuses to let her go through this. So he just keeps on pushing, trying to break the bond between him and Maeve, which didn't know that was a thing, but here he is.
If you want it bad enough, like, that you'll die from it, but he decides it's worth it.
So we have a quote here. Fenris strained against his invisible bindings as Aelin glanced at him, toward where he had sat for the past 2 days. In that same damned spot by the tent wall, despair shone in her eyes. true despair, without light or hope, the sort of despair that wished for death, the sort of despair that began to erode strength, to eat away at any resolve to endure. And Fenris couldn't allow it. He couldn't allow it, his shredded soul, in what was left of him after all he'd been forced to see and do. He couldn't allow it. Let it kill him, wreck him. He would not serve, not another heartbeat. He would not obey. He would not obey. And slowly Fenris got to his feet.
Oh my God.
Now, question, is he rising to 4 feet or two?
4 feet.
Paws up. Because I would have preferred like a little.
He's on the hind legs.
He is.
Just throwing
like
hands.
A kangaroo. Kangaroos can fuck you up.
Oh yeah, he's just throwing around like a kangaroo.
4 legs makes sense. He does have 4. So, Aelin is staring at Fenris as he pushes against the oath. And Cain is like, whoa, didn't expect that from you. Sit down, doggy. But Fenris, he's not having any of that. He's had enough. He has blood dripping from his nose, but he refuses to lay down. So he leaps for Cain just as he's about to break Aelin's spine and snaps the blood oath completely.
Oh, Fenris.
That's gotta hurt.
Basically, Fenris knows he's going to die from this, and he's using this to provide Aelin with an opportunity to run, and she takes it. We then go into Lorcan's point of view, and he's listening to the sounds of death coming to him from Rowan, but then he starts to feel something else going in the opposite direction, and he runs for it. And we get this quote. He'd reached the first of the hollows that flowed to the camp edge, the dips narrow and steep, when Aelin Galathinius appeared. Lorcan didn't expect the sob in his throat as she raced between the tents as he beheld the iron mask and the chains on her, hands still bound. So she is running and he's watching as even chained up, she is killing people to get out. She's like using their weapons against them. It's a whole moment. 1 minute, like she dips in between heels, and when she comes back up, Gavriel is running next to her, shielding her. Lorcan and Gavriel get to her and basically get her out, and Rowan appears. But their reunion isn't the reunion we're really after right now, because all we get is Fenris. Her breath was a wet rasp, a plea, a broken bloody plea. Fenris remained with Cain in the camp. Aelin pointed again, sobbing. Rowan turned from his mate. The rage in Rowan's eyes could devour the world. And that rage was about to extract the sort of vengeance only a mated male could command.
I think Brani wants that rage to devour her pussy.
Absolutely.
Yes.
It's just so hot. Like, Sarah had no business putting that in writing, and yet she did that for us. Rowan and Gavriel basically go back to the camp to get Fenris, and when they get there, both Fenris and Cain are unconscious. Gavriel heals Fenris as much as he can, but honestly, like, there's not a lot to be done at this stage. And Rowan then decides to get Gavriel to heal Cain, and we're like, what are you doing? But we figure out Rowan's plan very, very shortly. Cain groaned as unconsciousness gave way. By the time he woke, chained to that metal table, Rowan was ready. Cain beheld who stood over him, the tool in Rowan's tattooed hand, the others he had also laid out on that piece of velvet, and began thrashing, the iron chains held firm. Then Cain beheld the frozen rage in Rowan's eyes, understood what he intended to do with that sharp, sharp knife. A dark stain spread across the front of Cain's pants. Rowan wrapped an ice-kissed wind around the tent, blocking out all sound, and began.
Ooh. Oh,
that is
hello.
So absolutely terrifyingly hot.
Yeah.
So hot. It's like the ultimate form of
who did this to you?
It's the ultimate.
Who did this to you? Oh, it's me.
It's like Charmander is like, who did this to you in Air of Fire? And this is like Charizard.
It is.
Did you just talk about a Pokemon?
I did.
Evolution?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
So then we jump to this next chapter, and honestly, it's fucked. And it's basically like the entire book at this rate, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, part one of this like book is really depressing.
Lorcan and Aelin run for a lead. They get to a lead and say that they'll basically wait there for Rowan and Gavriel because a lead's been left.
It went so well the last time we left you in an external location. We're going to do it again.
Exactly. We're going to leave you in the rough terrain on your own with your fucked ankle. Good luck.
Yes. See ya. It's like Bear Grylls. They've just dropped her in the wilderness and they've gone, survive.
Aelin asks for someone to take off the mask
and the gauntlets on her hand and the shackles on her arm, but no one can actually get them off. And then we get this absolutely traumatic next bit, and I'm so sorry. The queen's gauntlets drew blood where they scraped into her neck, her jaw, as she heaved against the mask. Take it off. The plea turned into a scream. Take it off. Over and over, the queen screamed it. Take it off. Take it off. Take it off. She was sobbing amid her screaming, the sound shattering through the ancient forest. She said no other words, pleaded to no gods, no ancestors, only those words, again and again and again. Take it off. Take it off. Take it off.
Oh, my God.
That is just...
Oh. And then it gets worse. It gets worse because then Rowan gets there. He walks to her and kneels before her while she screams. Rowan reached out a trembling hand. The only sign of the agony Aelid had little doubt was coursing through him. Gently, he laid his hands on her wrists. Gently, he closed his fingers around them, halting the brutal clawing and digging. Aelin sobbed. Her body shuddered with the force of it. Take it off. Rowan's eyes flickered, panic and heartbreak and longing shining there. I will, but you have to be still, Fireheart. Just for a few moments. Take it off. The sobs ebbed, trickling into something broken and raw. And at this point, I was literally, like, there was brutal tears rolling down my face. They realize the locks are word marked shut, and Aelin basically has to show Rowan how to unlock the locks. And she's communicating to Aelid using her and Fenris's like blink communication, but Aelid's like, what the fuck? And we get this moment where she doesn't know if it's truly Rowan or not when she's communicating. And the quote is, she sniffed at the blood pooling in his hand, her nostrils flaring, her eyes lifted to his. Like the scent of his blood posed some question. I am your mate, Rowan whispered, as if it was the answer she'd sought. And the love in his eyes, in the way his voice broke, his bloodied hand trembling, Aelid's throat tightened. Oh, fuck.
Oh, fuck it up.
They managed to get the mask off, and Aelin is so pale underneath, and she just looks so empty. She basically just erupts entirely into flames and just sits there like a little ball of just trauma. And then they realize in this moment as well, because obviously she burns off that tiny little silk robe that she was wearing, she doesn't have a single scar on her body anymore.
This fucked me up. Fuck you, Maeve.
Fuck you, Maeve.
I'm scream grinding. Grinding, yes.
She's grinding.
I'm grinding. I'm scream grinding. No, I'm scream crying. And Rowan realizes what has been done to her. All of the fresh skin. No scars left on her body. We have a quote. They had taken her scars. Maeve had taken them all away. It told Rowan enough about what had been done. Oh, dear. She then notices Fenris and walks toward him, which is very sweet until you remember she's just stark as. And
she's stark as.
Like if I were Aelid, I'd be like, do you want my cloak?
You sure you don't want my cloak? Like it's totally...
do you need something? She starts like blinking. This? Because she's fragile. We can't scare her with loud words. So she gets to him and whispers something too quiet for anyone to hear, and then just cuts her forearm. He cracks open an eye, blinks once, and then he drinks from her, making another blood oath. And all of the other like warriors around are just like, what the fuck? We didn't know this was a thing. And then she commands him to live. And it's like, oh, stop it, Aelin. Beautiful little golden haired thing. I'm obsessed with you. And he eventually stands back up and bows to her. And again, we're scream grinding.
They then basically realize they need to skedaddle. They need to get out of here. And just when they're trying to figure out how they're going to do this, the little folk appear and walk to them. They basically do their whole little folk gang signs and they're like, we can give you a safe way out. And so they're like, cool, we'll do that. We get this quote. To end part one of our Kingdom of Ash episodes, Aelin continued on as well. And so Rowan followed her as he would follow her until his last breath and beyond it. Screaming, crying, shitting. The little folk basically lead them to a safe cave and she can rest there.
I love the little folk.
Music references. We're mixing it up for these Kingdom of Ash episodes because they're so big and because some of us put a lot of fan art in the show notes. I don't know who that might have been. So we're going to mix up our formatting and you are going to get some music references and fan art for each part of our Kingdom of Ash episodes so you can see what's like relevant. In a surprising twist of events, Georgia and I are submitting a song reference for Ellie's consideration and it is Rescue by Lauren Daigle. And the lyrics are, right, brace yourself. So obviously this song is Rowan coming to save Aylin. Like,
Yes, that is it.
So refer back to the first notes of the episode.
Yeah. So there's, you are not hidden. There's never been a moment you were forgotten. You are not hopeless, though you have been broken, your innocence stolen. And then we go to the chorus and it's like, I will send out an army to find you in the middle of the darkest night. It's true. I will rescue you. There is no distance that cannot be covered over and over. You're not defenseless. I'll be your shelter. I'll be your armor. Go through later choruses. There's even more. Like, it's just everything. I will send out an army to find you in the middle of the darkest night. It's true. I will rescue you. I will never stop marching to reach you in the middle of the hardest fight. It's true. I will rescue you.
The song is everything.
So mine is Paper Crown by Alec Benjamin, which is only available on YouTube. But I found this today, actually. And when I read the lyrics, I was like, did he write this for Kingdom of Ash? So the lyrics are, a paper crown and a heart made of glass, a tattered gown and a kingdom of ash, which I think it's meant to be said in like an American accent. So it rhymes. Okay, we're there. She walks alone. She can never look back. The story of a queen whose castle had fallen to the sea. She'll make it out, but she's never the same. She's looking down at the scars that remain, but you hold your ground when your kingdom's in flames.
Oh my God.
I know. I was like, sorry.
Alec Benjamin's just a closet Sarah J. Maas fan.
It's I know.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah. Okay then.
She was like, I was really inspired by this Kingdom of Ash reread. Then we're on to our fuck off giant list of fan art for part one. All right. Brace yourself. Gird your loins.
Gird them.
Loins are girded.
So we've got two pieces of artwork by Snow A Rocks, and one has literally only come out in the last week as we're recording. So really, it's just a sign. It's all meant to happen. And so those artworks are one, Aylin and Rowan, where she's doing the whole take it off thing, and that's painful. And then we have Aylin in the iron mask, which is also incredibly painful.
Yeah.
We've then got Aylin and Fenris by Lexa Arts, and that's just pain. That's the blood oath. We've then also got by Trono Devi Drow is another Aylin and Fenris where they're in chains. It's very sad. We've then got Ems Draws Things, and she has done Aylin in the iron box, which is just super sad.
That's scary.
We've then got by Mistletine Art, Maeve on the Throne in Doranel with Connell and Fenris and her owl. We've then got It's Wibble _ Art, which is Aylin in the iron mask in the coffin with
their
hankers.
I love their art, honestly.
Phenomenal. We've got one of my favourites by that same artist, which is where Aylin is obviously stark naked, giving Fenris the blood oath and they're all in fire. It's a great time. We're all having
it. It's kind of sexy, weirdly.
It's kind of weirdly sexy. Yeah. And then we've got Morgana Zero Anagram has done a Maeve portrait.
I love that. So this artwork is by NYQXXS. Don't ask me to say that out loud. And it is basically of Aylin when she's kneeling in the glass with Mab's crown on and it's fucked.
When Connell's about to be yeeted.
No.
Shout out to Connell. I think that is all of the fan art for part one. All right, everyone, we will be back next week for part two of Kingdom of Ash, and that is from chapters 32 onwards. In the meantime, remember you can watch the videos of these episodes on YouTube, you can listen on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from. Please remember to like, follow, and subscribe on TikTok and Instagram. We're at the A Book and a Bev podcast. And yeah, do all the things and, you know, just keep on keeping on. You do not yield. All that jazz. We're going to go cry now. Bye.
Yeah. Bye.